I fell in love with the prairies as soon as I moved out here almost 2 decades ago. And when I saw this book, Prairie: A Natural History of the Heart of North America by Candace Savage, it immediately called to me. She goes way back to geological history to set the stage for who lives here now and what the future of this area is. I'll be covering that in this podcast episode.
Hi, my name is Scott Gillespie of Plants Dig Soil, the name of the podcast and the consulting company. We're an independent agronomy company. We do not sell products. We provide advice only. We focus on realistic regen ag, which has to be proven and profitable. We work in person or remote or a combination of the two. Our pricing is set to be affordable to anyone from a Q&A package to full farm planning. There's no long-term commitments. You can retain our services, do it yourself, or hire others. Of course, we always love to work with people over the long term.
So I'll never forget when I first arrived in the prairies. I grew up in Ontario and I had been moving out to do my master's at the University of Manitoba. And I drove out in my Pontiac Sunfire and I drove the Ontario route, which is a very long route through the bedrock and forest and lakes of northern Ontario. And when I finally came to the edge of the forest and into the prairie, it was a very dramatic reveal of the tree line disappearing, fading out fairly quickly, and then all of a sudden a very big open prairie. And I just loved it. And I have been here ever since. So when I saw this book, it was very interesting to me that somebody had taken the time to read this or to research this and go through all the stuff that I'd been kind of curious about of this area. So the first thing that is really interesting where the name came from, it's a French word for woodland meadow. And when the Europeans were first in this area, it was what they saw as a natural landscape. They didn't see the human interaction of it or the human management of it. But in some ways, it's easy to judge them now. But when they were coming from a land which is Europe, where almost everything has been changed or modified by humans in terms of agriculture and dividing out land and buildings and cities and roads. So to them, it was a very large natural area that was very different from what they had ever seen before. Now, a lot of the history we read now starts there or goes back a few hundred years, but she goes back millions of years to talk about the geological history. And this was something that I found very fascinating to just know all the different layers of things that have built up or what have changed in this area over the years. It explains why we have potash reserves, which is potassium, deep down, kilometers down in Saskatchewan, and how that got there in the first place. It goes way, way, way back to explain this. And in previous podcast episodes, I've talked about the past 10,000 years of soil development, which were the after the last ice age, but that was just very recent geological history. It's fascinating to hear of mountains eroding and creating the soils that we know of today. And then the rise of the grasses that became the grasslands and what the prairies were when they were discovered by European settlers. And what it still is, where there is grassland still existing, or what it could be if we restore some of these areas. the fertility of our soils is based on this long cycle of grasses and other plants growing over millennia, where they were growing, bringing up or mining new nutrients, bringing them up, and then dying, and then the nutrients being cycled through animals or soil critters or soil fauna and microbes. And that's something, and I have talked about this a lot before, this is something that can get lost in the discussion. There are claims that we can just create a lot of the fertility we need for agriculture now, but that's not possible for the, when we're looking at proper time scales. When the indigenous were living fully on this land, it was a complete cycle. There was farming in near my area, but not very much. But anywhere where there was farming, it was at a small scale, and it was only used for a few generations, and then it was left back to recover. Whereas now we're into a system where everything, well, a lot of things get exported, and many things across the ocean. And at the scale that we are taking things from the land, it isn't sustainable without bringing nutrients back into it. So it is fascinating getting this very, very broad, high-level look at what the prairies are and what they are realistically capable of. Now, the middle part of the book covers a lot of the critters and plants and things that live on the prairies or would have naturally lived here over the millennia. And I'm not going to go into too much detail on that because it is just, it's fascinating just learning all the different interactions that she's been able to uncover. One of the things that is interesting is a discussion on water. When the Europeans came, they saw swamps or wetlands as stagnant places that needed to be drained. And I think our understanding of this is changing, but I think it still needs a ways to go. In the past, farmers were paid to drain these, or were encouraged to drain these areas to make them arable or to farmable. But this isn't a way that they really should be used. They are a good reserve of animals, plants. They filter out, they filter the water. They allow migratory birds to have landing places to go all the way from the as far as South America, but usually the south of North America, all the way to the Arctic. They give these natural resting points along the way. And more importantly, they are the buffer for when we have large rains or when the rains do come. And this has been something that has been lost in the discussion, that when you take these out, this is where you lose. This is one of the things that you lose. One critter that I do want to discuss, and I have talked about in podcast episodes years ago, are the ants. She does have an interesting discussion on ants and earthworms, and how earthworms, even though they are considered today or put forward today as being the best indicators of soil health in the prairies, they are not necessarily, because they are what would be considered invasive or a new species in the system. It is possible that they were here before the last ice age, but as it was before European contact, they weren't here. And the ants were what did the tillage or mixed up the soil. They figure it took a century, and they would have everything mixed. So it's possible that these earthworms, when they can mix the soil so much faster and cycle nutrients so much faster, are not necessarily the best indicators of soil health. So it is fascinating. There's a lot of other things that she discusses in this section, but I'm not going to cover it in this because this is just the things that I learned from it and a way to encourage you to pick this book up and read it yourself. I'm just going to end the episode with talking about farming in the European style and how it can be adapted to maybe be better for this area. Something interesting that was brought up in her book was that we might have more trees here now than you would have seen pre-contact or two or three centuries ago, because the overgrazing by the cattle was what enabled the trees to take root. So if we are able to switch to a more of a mob grazing system, which is this the idea of giving the cattle small areas to work at, and then they move on and they give it full recovery, the grasses and a lot of the other plants that are in the system are able to keep back brushy areas or tree areas, whereas now they seem to be something that, at least in the northern parts of the prairies or central parts, they are a problem for people that are trying to keep pasture land. In my area, in the southern part, trees are not really a problem for a grazing system. They don't naturally grow here, so any of our trees here are ones that are either they live naturally in the river bottoms, but that's about it. So any trees on the landscape are from humans that are taking care of them. Now, I think there's a lot of potential for prairie strips or finding little areas in the fields where we can restore it either to prairie or at least to the species that are going to give us the greatest benefit, that allow these beneficial insects to have a place to live and be able to take care of our pests without having to go or reducing the need for using chemicals. Now, I think the problem that we have right now is that our fields are so big and everybody's trying to get them bigger and bigger. So we have these exposed middle areas that are a big area, a big monoculture crop that once a pest gets in, it will take over. There's nothing there to keep it in check. How we do this, I think it takes a whole thought process and a way of making our machinery work in these systems and being dedicated to it. Now, I'm not sure where things are going to go, but I do think that we are at the peak of large machinery. It gets bigger and bigger every year, bigger and bigger combines or tractors and equipment to try to cover as much land as possible in the shortest amount of time. I think that's changing. With these new autonomous vehicles or autonomous machines that are coming out, one of the things that they can do that humans can't or are tougher to do for humans is work 24/7. So work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, of course, it still is going to require a human to monitor these or keep them in check. But what they can do is instead of trying to make one machine that one human operates and try to make it as big as possible, you could have five of these or six of them or whatever you need that are doing small strips at a time and for long hours that a human operator can't handle. And there's going to be so many other benefits because we can have these little strips through and we can cut back on compaction of soil because we can have smaller machinery. So if we think about the machinery of 100 years ago, the compaction with that was nowhere near what we have when we have large, massive tractors or combines. So I think there's hope. I'm looking forward to what the future will bring and what we can accomplish over the decades to come. I think this is a very interesting book that is well worth your read. It does relate to the book review last month on Braiding Sweetgrass, which looked at indigenous views of North America and what it was like pre-contact. I think this has a similar theme or a similar impact, except that it's looking at it from the European standpoint, but also looking at it from a very, very, very broad scale and getting to understand the land and what it can actually do, not what we think we want it to do. So again, I encourage you to check it out. There'll be a link to the book, to the author's website or to the publisher's website in the description. And I will talk to you next time.